faith and hope, the world will disagree. But all mankind's concern is charity. All mankind, perhaps, but not Professor Gildy. Still, he might reasonably be expected to know the old adage, charity begins at home. It is a point well worth taking. And the only alternative for Professor Gildy is the vanishing point.
Of all the friends I ever had, I think that Professor Frederick Gildy was the most unlikely. Our enjoyment of each other's company baffled everyone. It was, as poor Frederick often said, the perfect demonstration of the attraction of opposites. He, the icy skeptic with his mind like an impatient razor, and one of the greatest scientific reputations in the world. And I, well, a plain and obscure priest, trying my best to do God's will among the twisted alleys and more twisted lives of the East End of London. Our oddly successful friendship began one night when I attended one of his free public lectures. For though Gildy held a low opinion of the human race, he had a strict sense of his duty to instruct it. As he was famous for doing, he spoke that night without notes and with a total fluency which I only wished I could command in my sermons.
And so we see that to the truly scientific mind, the old concept of the soul is an outmoded mental quirk which has been totally discredited by modern medical research. And we will surely see the day when the mere throwing of a switch will relieve human suffering in every case from paralysis to insanity. The idea that a spirit activates our bodies is like a savage thinking that a motor car moves because there's a ghost under the hood. And yes, and laughter is a possible response to the intellectual incompetence I've just described. However, I venture to suggest that a more appropriate one be indifference or contempt.
Several members of the audience seated near me kept glancing in my direction, noticing my cassock and expecting to see me rise and march out in horror. Dear me, no. I think I was touched by the childlike innocence of Gildy's materialism. It takes a great power of faith to be sure that God and the soul do not exist. Perhaps that was the reason I approached the celebrated professor afterwards, and we fell into a conversation so quickly and easily that neither of us noticed that the audience had gone. At last, Gildy gathered up his papers. He fixed me with his bright, impersonal eyes and said something rather surprising.
Well, it's refreshing to find a clergyman who can think. You must come to dinner at my house, Hyde Park Place.
With pleasure. Oh,
good, good. Well?
Yeah, well, I'm preaching at St. Saviour's a week Sunday. That's quite near you.
I will come to supper afterwards.
Thank you, I will.
Time?
As soon as I finish my sermon. The service is at 6:30.
8, then. Don't make the sermon too long. My number in Hyde Park Place is 100. Good night, sir.
Yeah, good night.
On the appointed Sunday, I was a little late for dinner. I'm afraid I'm one of those preachers who gets carried away by his subject, you see. Though my congregations are always kind, never let on that I'm trying their patience.
That we must love one another is a bright light showing us the chain of human sympathy that makes each of us truly useful in this world. We come to church together that we may help one another to see God face to face. The way of the hermit is not only hard, it's dangerous.
And afterwards, there I was, tardy as ever, hurrying my way through streets thronged with people of every class and kind, enjoying the spring night, until I came to an elegant house opposite one of the gates of Hyde Park, and was admitted by a man with a stony face and the manners of a perfect servant.
Father Murchison.
Yes.
Professor Gildy is waiting for you in the dining room.
Ah.
This way, please.
Father Murchison, sir.
Ah, well, a long sermon. Come in and sit down. We'll dine immediately. Pitting, you may serve now.
At once.
Well, Murchison, I trust you find the house of the scientist has a satisfactory cuisine.
Oh, entirely. Your table and appointments are certainly in the latest modern taste, Professor.
I use them professionally. I've tested hypotheses by the shape of this table, for instance.
Oh, how so?
Well, I've had precisely the same guests to dinner twice. Once at a square table, once at this oval one. Mm-hmm. The first one was a dull failure. The second, brilliant success.
And how do you account for the difference?
Yes, well, I know how you'd account for it.
Oh, indeed. How then?
Well, you'd say that since an oval table has no corners, the chain of human sympathy, the electric current, to be more precise, is much more complete.
Chain of human... Why, you do go to church sometimes, then. You heard my sermon tonight?
First time for ages. And mind you, I was tremendously bored.
Oh. Dear, dear. What a pity.
By the service, not the sermon. I don't pay a compliment. I say it a fact. The sermon didn't bore me. If it had, I should have said so. Mm. But your omission of the part that liver plays in love is a very serious one.
Well, surely your omission of any desire for human affection is a more serious one.
Oh, nonsense. I undertake all my work entirely for its own sake. Out of curiosity. Hmm. Would my fellow man be any better off if he had my love instead of my indifference?
Yes.
Rank sentimentality. Now, take, for example, my butler, Pitting. Have you noticed him?
Of course.
But perfect servant. Makes me absolutely comfortable. But I never think about him as a human being.
But if you were to need his help, not as a man and a butler, but as a man and a brother, what then?
I think we'll have our coffee upstairs, Murchison. I want to show you my workroom.
Yes.
Come along.
Oh, excuse me. I can't... The light.
Yes. Visitors often have that trouble with my work lamps. Sharp, white light. Don't worry. You'll get used to it in a moment.
I certainly hope so. What in the world? Why? You have a pet.
No, I possess a parrot. His name is Napoleon. I bought him for experiments.
Experiments?
As I was making a study of the imitative power of birds, and happened never to have gotten rid of them, that sort. May I have a coffee?
Yes, please. Just black, please. Well, at least Napoleon's fond of you.
Paw. There, dear. He watches me, listens to me, in order to imitate me. Yeah. There's a mind behind that watching, calculating all the time to reproduce what it sees and hears. But affection from anything or anyone. No, thank God.
I was often at Gildy's house over the next year and a half. We became firm friends, to the astonishment of all who knew us. He was as close to me, I believe, as it was possible for him to be to another human being. I suppose that we might have ambled along pleasantly this way to the end of our lives, had there not come an autumn evening the next year when something happened.
Come in.
Father Murchison to see you, sir.
What?
This way, please, sir. Frederick! Good heavens.
Oh, it's you, is it? Well, glad to see you. Come to the fire.
Well, Frederick, you don't look well tonight.
Sit down, sit down.
Oh, why, Frederick?
What is it?
You've covered up the parrot's cage. I've never seen you shroud poor old Napoleon at night before.
Oh, well, it was necessary.
Oh, well, certainly, I've no desire to pray.
Murchison, do you think I'm an attractive man?
Why, bless me. What makes you ask? Do you mean to the opposite sex?
That's what I don't know. Just what I don't know.
You don't know?
Well, let's say, do you think there's anything about me which might
draw a human being or an animal, you know, irresistibly towards me.
Whether you desired it or not?
If I definitely did not desire it.
Look, Frederick, will you please stop talking in riddles?
Yes, you're quite right. Now, I must tell you the facts, and you must tell me what you think of them.
Yes, by all means.
The night before last, I went to the front door to get a breath of fresh air. You know, I often do that after a hard night's work.
Yes.
The hour was about 11, and I was staring across at the park when I found my eyes were directed towards somebody or something sitting with its back to me on one of the benches.
Something?
I found I had an extraordinary interest in the object. So great that I crossed the road, went through the gate and up to the bench. And there was nothing on it.
A trick of the light.
Now, please, wait. I was very disappointed. Inexplicably so. I returned to the house and found that I'd left the front door half open.
That's rather imprudent in London, isn't it?
Very. You see, I'd hardly come back before I became convinced that somebody had gotten into the house during my absence. And that someone was the person I'd seen in the park. I searched everywhere, even disturbed Pitting and the other servants.
And there was no one?
No one and nothing.
Well, then the intruder must have come in and gone out again before you re-entered the house.
No. He stayed. He was still in the house. Is still here. Now. I know what you're going to say, Murchison, and I assure you I am perfectly sane. But I know, as surely as if I could see it or hear it, that my household has been increased by one.
No? How can you know?
Well, by a certain attention to me. Hmm? And I have now come to a very strange conclusion.
What? I mean, what was it?
That whoever, whatever it is becoming more than interested in me.
More than?
The thing is becoming fond of me. Most unusual phenomenon, isn't it?
Frederick, you are overworked. You're overstrained. Now get at least a week of complete rest away from London. Change of air at once.
Yes. Yes, every possibility, you're right.
Yes.
Yes, well, I'll take your prescription and I'll go tomorrow for a week at Westgate and to leave Napoleon here to keep house in my absence.
Well, thank God.
That's a most interesting experiment.
Experiment?
Well, why, yes, Father. Aren't you as interested as I am to know whether the thing stays here or follows me?
During the week of my friend's absence, I was, thank heaven, too busy with the troubles of my poor parishioners to fret uselessly about him. When a note was delivered informing me of his return, I hurried round at once. He did not look so well as I had hoped.
Well, Frederick, did you have this sensation of someone there in West?
No, not once, the whole week.
Well, there you are.
But the instant I entered the house, it was waiting for me. More affectionate than ever.
Well, now, Frederick.
So I have seen it.
What?
Well, to be precise, I've seen someone who has seen it.
Frederick, look, my dear friend, you know you can't go on like this.
Yes, indeed. But I make a bargain with you. Bear with me, and I will give you a demonstration, a quite convincing scientific demonstration of the existence and the nature of my guest. Now, if I fail to convince you, I will agree to place myself under the care of any specialist in mental diseases you may wish to choose. Is it a bargain?
What's the nature of this demonstration?
Now, we will conceal ourselves so as not to distract him and watch what he does.
Watch whom?
Napoleon there. Watch him and hear him.
Oh, if you insist.
Well, come on now. Behind these curtains. And by stretching, I can just remove the cover from his cage. Mm-hmm. Now, twitch on the cord. There. Now, observe him closely.
If
for heaven's sake, Frederick. He looks exactly like any other parrot when it wakes. He's just preening himself. He's not paying any attention to anything else at all. Wait. Don't you hear? You see, that's me he's imitating. He's had me down pat for a year.
Wait.
Guilty, I'm afraid Napoleon is proving absolutely nothing.
Be quiet. Look at him. Look.
Well, something's drawn his attention, that's all.
Something?
Oh, yes.
Ah, now, look. Look how he's poking his head against the side of the cage. When does he do that, Murchison?
Frederick.
You've seen him do that often enough. When does he do that?
When you scratch his head through the bars.
Look, is that your proof? Now, there's more. Look at him. Look.
Oh. It's out. He's bowing and dipping his head like some stage servant in a farce.
Do you hear? You see?
Oh, stop it, Gilly.
Why?
Well, then in the name of God, I will. Back to sleep, Napoleon.
Now, do you see? Now, do you understand?
It's fascinating. Once that horrible sound stops.
But it hasn't stopped. I can still feel the thing here. Somewhere. All you've done is silence its mouthpiece.
My dear Frederick, you're torturing yourself for nothing. There's a human being behind this, as real as you and I.
How can there be?
Someone has been in here while you were away.
No one. The servants all swear to it. Are they all liars?
One of their voices. The servants.
I tell you, Murchison, the thing is still in the room now.
No.
Was that parrot responding to something right here, or was he not?
Yes, it was.
Then it's as plain as day, isn't it? Napoleon can see and hear that thing. Hearing the parrot, we hear it. Now, what are we hearing, my friend?
Frederick, look, I...
That voice, what does it sound like? What does it say? You know as well as I do. Say it.
It's the voice of a lovesick idiot.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. And Murchison, my friend, it, that thing that the parrot hears, that slime, is sick with love for me. Oh, yes. Yes, it wants me, desires me, craves me. I could fight hatred or malice, but not this. And don't you see? It has no mind.
I reasoned with him. I, the priest, gave him every material explanation I could think of, and the materialist did not believe me. I asked him to pray with me, and he would not. To the very end, he tried not to depend on anyone, and he almost succeeded. Not quite. Just after dawn, a telegram was brought to me in Limehouse. For God's sake, come, Gildy.
Frederick, what is it?
Pitting's gone.
But gone?
Yes, he wouldn't stay with me. Through the night.
You asked Pitting to stay with you?
I had to.
But why?
Last night. I felt it.
What?
As I was going upstairs to bed. It nestled against me.
No.
Yes, it squeezed up to me. A loathsome, sickening tenderness. I shouted for Pitting. I believe I must have cried help.
And he came, of course.
Well, yes, of course he answered the bell. You imagine Pitting not answering a summons. Pitting! Pitting!
For God's sake, come here, Evans.
Pitting! Where are you?
Yes, Professor Gildy. You called, sir?
Called? I said I've been waiting for 5 minutes. What the hell took you so long?
I was in bed when the bell rang, sir. I have my duties in the morning. I assume you are aware it is now past midnight.
Yes, yes, I... Pitting. My, nerves are bad tonight. Yes, that's, they're bad. Your sleep is, it's quite impossible. Can't sleep. Stay with me.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Don't leave me. I can't bear to be alone. Please.
It is my understanding, sir, that I was engaged as your butler, not as a private nurse. For the services you seem to require, I respectfully suggest you look elsewhere.
Pitting. No.
Now, if you will excuse me.
You traitor.
I beg your pardon.
I plead for help, and there's no one here but a robot. What kind of man are you?
I am sorry, sir, but my function in your household does not require me to tolerate personal abuse. I respectfully tender my resignation from your service, effective at once.
You what?
Your recent behavior, sir, has not been consistent with the standards of employment to which I am accustomed. I see no need for further comment.
Yes, very well. Get out. First thing in the morning.
It will not be necessary for either of us to wait that long. Good night, Professor Gildy.
Little Frederick, I will stay with you all night tonight.
No, no. No, no. No, I won't have it, you hear? You can do nothing but watch me writhing in its caresses. Oh. What do you think I'll tolerate that?
What? What will you do?
My lecture in Paris is the day after tomorrow. Well, I'll go by the early boat train tomorrow morning. Spend tonight in the station hotel. It'll be more convenient. You see, before the train.
Convenient, yes. Yes, of course.
Yes, yes. Yes. And, perhaps, my lover will die. No, no, die of loneliness, you see.
Guilty.
Guilty, stop!
It's possible.
Stop it!
The laughter, the pathetic lie about the hotel alarmed me more than anything that had happened yet. When men of Frederick's stamp lose their pride, they lose everything. I hoped and prayed that a change of scene, even of language, would take the yoke from him. But it did not please God to do so. 3 days later, every newspaper in Europe trumpeted the news from Paris.
Il me faut répéter, avec la plus grande confiance, que les questions de la science ne sont rien d'autre que des questions d'expérimentation. Ne sont rien d'autre que... Get away. Get away from me. No. 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 Help. Can no one help me?
Professor Gildy, the woman, are you ill? What is it?
Chef, for God's sake, help me.
It's followed me here to Paris. What?
Careful. It kissed me. Do you know what his mouth is like?
Professor Gildy, you are very ill. Dr. Dinel here will help you from the platform while I explain to you.
Don't leave me. Don't leave me.
Professor Gildy, you are hurting my arm. Please go. Dinel. Au secours. Mesdames. Mesdemoiselles. Messieurs. Je regrette de vous annoncer que le professeur Gildy est indisposé. C'est dommage, mais... Mais je crains qu'il nous faut terminer la conférence.
So, you see, it's with me everywhere now, day and night. But what is it? Why? Why should it have to come from me?
Perhaps as a punishment?
For what?
You hated affection. You put human feeling aside with contempt.
And this is the comfort you offer me?
It's the only thing that points to hope, Frederick. If it came to you because
You refuse to love. Endure it. Do more. Try to give it what it seeks.
But it seeks my love.
Learn to give it your love, and it may go, having received what it came for.
Never. Hatred, yes. I can give it that. Always that. Hatred. Hatred. Oh, yes, I know what you're thinking, whatever you are. You're waiting for me to break down and give up and love you. Yes, but understand me. Understand me, never. Never in a million years. I will loathe you to my dying breath. If I could reach you, I would rip you in pieces with my bare hands. Careful. Murchison, listen. Listen.
But its courage is covered.
It's angry. Napoleon's given us a signal. It hits me at last. It wants to leave. It wants to go. It's telling me. Let it out. Quick, let it out.
The window, should I open it?
The door. It will return the same way it came. The door, quick. Get downstairs and hurry. The front door, quick.
I raced downstairs and opened the street door. For a moment, I thought I caught sight of a figure or something across the street in the park, huddled on one of the benches. But I had time for no more than a glance when... A moment later, I found him sprawled on the carpet. In the glaring white light he had burned even in daytime, lay Professor Frederick Kilty. He was quite dead when I reached him.
Yes, a very great loss to science and progress, I'm afraid. Heart failure.
Failure of the heart. That was it, Doctor?
Yes.
Could it have been prevented?
Oh, possibly, if it had been caught in time. Professor was too much absorbed in his work. He should have lived differently.
Yes.
Charity begins at home, indeed, and with a vengeance. Professor Gildy might well have attended his cleric friend's kindly admonitions to pray with him. But alas, Gildy was a scientist whose research had taken him to a most loveless quarter on the frontier of knowledge, a place all too near the vanishing point.
How Love Came to Professor Gildy by Robert S. Hitchens. Adapted for radio by John Douglas. Starring Neil Monroe as Gildy and Chris Wiggins as Father Murchison. Philip Craig was heard as Pitting, Barbara Kyle as Napoleon, Stephen Wimette as Chalfont, and John Douglas as the Doctor and Dinelle. Casting consultant was Ann Tate with Catherine Kester. Recording engineer was John McCarthy, with sound effects by Bill Robinson, and the production assistant was Nina Callahan. Original music was composed and conducted by Richard Bronskill. The series script editor is Sandra Rabinovich, and the voice of introduction is David Calderisi. How Love Came to Professor Gildy was produced and directed at Studio G in Toronto by series executive producer William Lane.